January 31st, 1999 was a beautiful, clear winter day in Vermont. The sky was that dark shade of blue particular to late January. After a winter in which every promised snowfall came in the form of freezing rain or sleet, resulting in a foot of solid ice, we had finally gotten 4 inches of glorious, fluffy snow. In the afternoon, a friend and I went to a house concert given by a local classical pianist to celebrate his new grand piano. The music was superb, and we left the concert nourished in both spirit and body. The pianist's partner, a caterer, had provided goodies. Later in the evening, we decided to forgo watching the Super Bowl in favor of a moonlight ski. The moon, just risen, was enormous. The stars glittered in the sky. The snow sparkled. The conditions were so good, it was like skiing on velvet. It had been a perfect day. The next morning, the temperature was 12 below zero. My friend left for town, and I settled into my chair by the fire with a cup of tea and my current book for my favorite hour of the day. I heard the door open. It was my friend with the joyful news that his car was stuck in the snow. I sighed and donned parka, mittens, boots, etc., and headed out to the car. It wasn't too hard to push it out of the snowbank, but then we discovered that a tire was flat. 20 minutes later, we gave up trying to loosen the lug nuts and headed into the house to call the garage. The phone was ringing. My fingers and toes were stinging from the cold. My nose was dripping. I was annoyed. It wasn't even 8 a.m. My hour of reading was shot, and some insensitive idiot was calling me. I run my printmaking studio out of my home and get business calls at all sorts of inappropriate hours. Ordinarily, I let the machine handle such calls, but since this was obviously going to be a bad day, I thought I'd better answer it. As you've no doubt guessed by now, it was the call. A very pleasant-sounding woman told me that Snowflake Bentley had won the Caldecott Medal. I have no idea what I said, something about feeling that such a joke was in poor taste. But eventually, I was convinced that the impossible had indeed happened. I really couldn't quite believe it, and in fact, when I called my eldest son in Austin to tell him the good news, he said, "Well, don't get too excited, Mom. They'll probably call back to tell you they miscounted." All in all, it was not that bad a day. I realize that it is something of a cliche to include the "where were you when" part, but I still love telling the story because winter in Vermont plays such an important part in my life and in Snowflake Bentley's story. I think you'd have to say that I got into children's book illustration through the back door. In the early 60s, my husband, Tom, and I moved to a small hill farm in northern Vermont. I had always wanted to live in a place that got plenty of snow, and as we drove down roads lined with snowbanks so high we couldn't see over them, I knew I had found the spot. We yearned to live a simple, self-sufficient life. Surely a cow, a flock of chickens, maybe a team of horses, and a big garden would do the trick. Ha! It quickly became obvious that a source of income would also be necessary. With a serious teacher shortage, I soon found myself hired to teach grades 1 through 8 in a small one-room school. I had had no education courses, and I was scared stiff. A visit to the school did little to calm my fears. Besides reading and math texts and an old set of encyclopedias, long outdated, there were no books in evidence. Nothing except a picture of George Washington in the clouds adorned the walls. Since I had no idea how I would approach the actual teaching part, I sought a distraction to keep myself from dwelling on the dreaded first day of school. So I made a large, colorful, and very simple, school was due to start in a few days, set of alphabet posters to decorate the room. It was the first of many alphabets I have created, and I am still fascinated by the possibilities. That first year was a challenging, exciting, and exhausting one. In those days, Vermont was still an agricultural state. There were actually more cows than people. The children I taught came from a close-knit community of farm families. In some cases, students walked miles to school after helping milk the cows by hand. We had a cook who came in every day to prepare hot lunch. She and her children, students in the school, had picked blackberries in the summer and they became the basis for many a cobbler that first winter. Since there were no textbooks for history and science, there was no set curriculum, and I had a great deal of freedom in those areas. I am fairly hopeless at math, but fortunately, several of the older students were whizzes, and I relied on them to teach when I wasn't up to the task. One of the glories of a one-room school is that education becomes a collaborative effort and depends on everyone's participation. Those kids were great. They learned, I learned, and we all had fun besides. Eventually, with our second child on the way, I decided to try to run a business out of my home. I had studied both printmaking and painting. I had the great good fortune to study woodcut and etching with Leonard Baskin. Since it seemed important to produce works that were affordable to my neighbors, and the thought of trudging around the city trying to find a gallery that would exhibit my paintings was a depressing one, I decided to concentrate on woodcut prints. From the start, the business was modestly successful and continued to grow steadily. In the late 70s, the Vermont Council on the Arts announced a series of grants funded by the federal agency CETA for artists to produce a body of work based on Vermont themes. I decided to apply, proposing to design a set of alphabet posters chronicling the fast disappearing rural way of life that had attracted me to Vermont. A group of 10 was chosen, two each of writers, photographers, craftspeople, musicians, and fine artists. We met every month for a show and tell and became a close, supportive group. The Vermont Department of Education liked the posters I designed and printed a set for every Vermont classroom, kindergarten through third grade. Aha, I thought, these posters look ideal for a children's book. So I scheduled a week of interviews with art directors, bought a classy-looking, burgundy, faux leather, zippered portfolio, and headed for the big city. Polite indifference is about as enthusiastic a response as I got. One art director even told me that woodcuts were hopelessly passé. At least I got to spend a week in the city. I was a little disappointed, but not too surprised. Actually, an immediate offer to publish wouldn't have surprised me all that much either. I returned to print production in Vermont and forgot all about book illustration. About a year later, I got a call from David Godin, ever the champion of woodcut and wood engraving, saying that he had heard of the woodcut alphabet and would like to take a look at the prints. This eventually became my first children's book, A Farmer's Alphabet. In the following years, a few more illustration jobs came my way. Then in the early 90s, I got a call from Jeff Dwyer and Elizabeth O'Grady. I should invest in telephone stock. Asking me if I would be interested in having them represent me as a children's book illustrator. We met and immediately hit it off. I was excited at the chance to illustrate more books. People tend to think that artists have an ideal existence. After all, we supposedly get to be playful and creative on a daily basis. But I can tell you that the working life of a production craftsperson can be downright boring at times. I often feel like a particularly inefficient small factory. Everything done by hand, carving, printing, painting, packing, shipping, and bookkeeping all constitute aspects of my workday. While carving the block is pure bliss to me, I am not fastidious enough to be a good printer. Operating my ancient proof press is physically quite tiring. Since I work at home, I never really get to leave the job behind. And of course, woodcut blocks can be printed practically forever, or perhaps I should say, ad nauseum. While I design many new prints each year, I have carved well over 1,000 blocks, much of my working life is devoted to production work. As you might imagine, the prospect of working on a book, which is a one-time effort that usually requires learning lots of new stuff and challenges my drawing abilities, fills me with joy. And so, when Jeff called me to say that he would be sending me a manuscript about Snowflake Bentley to read, I was quite pleased. Being a resident of Vermont, even after 35 years, it would be presumptuous to call myself a Vermonter. I was, of course, aware of Bentley's work with snow crystals. The manuscript arrived. I read it and liked it. The writing was simple, yet elegant, and I was eager to do the illustrations. After signing the contract, however, the doubts began. Initial excitement over a new project is, for me, inevitably followed by a feeling of dismay. I wish I were one of those people whose enthusiasm and optimism propel them into a whirlwind of productivity. I am not. I suddenly developed an urgent need to clean the cellar, reorganize the bureau drawers, anything to avoid working on the new project. In this case, I was especially worried because so much of my subject matter has dealt with images of rural Vermont, and winter is my favorite season to depict. I doubted that I could bring much freshness or energy to the woodcuts. Fortunately, after meeting with my editor, Ann Ryder, at Houghton Mifflin, and the art director, Bob Kosterko, some of my fears were allayed. We talked about the form the book might take and decided that sidebars would be useful to add some technical information without disturbing the text. Once the format was established, the work began to progress. My research took me to Jericho, Vermont, and I spent one October afternoon in the Jericho Historical Society's unheated reading room, poring over Bentley family photos and memorabilia. The adjacent museum houses an exhibit which includes his camera and many of the incredibly beautiful photographs of snowflakes that he made during his 70-year obsession with snow. Vermont has always loved its eccentrics, and Snowflake Bentley certainly met the qualifications. A dairy farmer by profession, he was also a dedicated scholar and scientist, largely self-taught in the 19th century tradition, who placed more value on satisfying his intellectual curiosity than on earning money. His neighbors and many of his own family members thought he was at best foolish, but he was such a thoroughly likable human being that he became a valued member of the community. As I worked in the initial drawings, I began to realize what an important message this book could convey. So often children, and adults, are told that their dreams and passions are impractical. By many people's standards, Snowflake Bentley would be considered a failure, and yet in the most important aspects, his life was a roaring success. He found as much joy in a snowstorm at age 70 as he did at age 10. If that isn't success, what is? So in the end, it was the extraordinary Wilson Snowflake Bentley himself who came to my assistance. I had developed a great fondness and admiration for him, and I wanted to help tell his story. My approach to the creative process is to clear the decks, get out of the way, and let things happen. As a result, I am not given to analyzing or intellectualizing about my work. Although I believe that drawing is important in that it forces one to really look at the object in question, I rarely do detailed drawings as preliminary work. I prefer instead to do my designing directly on the block. Once the final drawings are on the block, everything goes smoothly, at least from a technical point of view. Although apprehensive in the initial stages of every book I illustrate, when the knife begins to sing on the block, all doubts vanish. As I cut, I do many revisions, and sometimes, if I've really turned off the voice in my head, amazing, at least to me, things appear. After printing the carved blocks, the final painting of the illustrations begins. This part is the most fun, or perhaps the least stressful. The difficult work is over. The possibility of making a serious carving error no longer exists, and deciding on colors and painting techniques feels like play. The thing that especially pleases me about Snowflake Bentley is that it is a real collaboration in the best sense of the word. My editor, Ann Ryder, provided direction when needed while allowing me the maximum freedom to develop the images and expressing confidence in the work I was doing. Bob Kosterko developed a wonderful design for the book, including the idea of the snowflake sidebars. And of course, Jacqueline Briggs Martin wrote the lyrical text. In addition to thanking Anne, Bob, and Jacqueline, I would like to thank the Caldecott Committee for choosing Snowflake Bentley. It is an unimaginable honor. I also thank libraries everywhere. As a child, I used to get an actual physical thrill of excitement when I entered a library. Books were my companions during my somewhat lonely and isolated teenage years. I still feel that thrill. Thanks to Jeff Dwyer and Elizabeth O'Grady for representing me and for their friendship and unfailing cheerfulness. And finally, I thank my parents. I can't imagine more supportive parents. Although neither one of them was an artist, they were delighted when I decided to try to earn my living as a printmaker. They never suggested that something else might be more practical. They would have been so proud. I'll close with a final story. In the whirlwind aftermath of winning the Caldecott, I spoke to many local groups. I always tried to emphasize that the central theme of the book was to follow one's passion, regardless of how difficult, impossible, or impractical it might seem. After one of these informal talks, a woman came up to me and told me she had read the book to her children and discussed it with them, adding that she would be proud if they grew up to be like Snowflake Bentley. Her 4-year-old daughter looked increasingly distressed. Finally, she burst into tears and wailed, "But I don't want to photograph snowflakes." I know this led to further discussion, and it is my fervent hope that Snowflake Bentley may inspire both children and adults to follow their own unique paths in life.